today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Did have one gig when we were in 10th grade after a football game on a portable stage near the jetty at Cabrillo Beach. We were so terrible that everyone started throwing shit at us, and D Boone's pop drove his pickup right up to the stage so we could jump in and escape. Everyone, and welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode of our program. Today will be the final episode in the first set of our Heroes of Rock series, which examines contributors to the far-reaching genre of rock, from pioneers to superstars, little-known artists to trailblazers. One thing unites these heroes. They had the rock inside them, and they found a way to let it out. Today, D. Boone. Dale Boone was born in San Pedro, California on April 1, 1958. His father, a Navy veteran, worked installing radios in Buick cars, and the Boones lived in former World War II barracks that had been converted into public housing. Boone met future bandmate Mike Watt when they were 12. Boone was in a tree and thought Watt was one of his friends named Eskimo, and he jumped out of the tree and landed on Watt. They bonded immediately. Watt has claimed that Boone was unfamiliar with popular music and had grown up listening to Buck Owens and Creedence Clearwater Revival. Watt introduced Boone to Blue Oyster Cult, The Who, and many other classic rock bands. Boone began painting in his teens and signed his work D. Boone, partly because D was his slang for cannabis, partly after Daniel Boone, but mostly because it was similar to E. Bloom, Blue Oyster Cult's vocalist and guitarist. Boone's mother showed him how to play basic chords on the guitar and suggested Watt take up the bass. By 1978, the pair had joined up with vocalist Martin Tamburevich and drummer George Hurley to form the Reactionaries. The quartet existed for roughly 2 years, practicing regularly but rarely, if ever, performing live. The group recorded demos of their songs in a shed behind drummer Hurley's house in January of 1979. Here's one of those surviving recordings, The Big Lie.
Thank you.
Reactionaries disbanded in 1979, though Tamburevich stayed close to Watt and Boone, forming the New Alliance record label with them and contributing lyrics to their next project, a trio called the Minutemen, who grew to become one of the most daring and original punk bands of all time. The original drummer in the Minutemen was a friend of Boone's named Frank Tonch, who played on the band's earliest song and at their first two gigs. Here's Mike Watt writing in the book Under the Big Black Sun, describing how the original Minutemen sounded at that time. This was not the Reactionaries. You could tell D. Boone was involved at a whole other level. He was singing his songs, mine too, for the first time. It was very inspiring. D. Boone called his lyrics thinking out loud, and I dug that, because in fact, that's what we were doing. He also didn't like the hierarchy of where he saw rock and roll going, the domination of the electric guitar, so he wanted to do something political with our band's makeup, and decided to play really trebly like we learned from the R&B guys when we were younger. That way, it opened up for the bass and the drums to come through more. D. Boone said that the real politics ain't really just using words, and he wanted to put into action some egalitarian ideas in our band structure. Tonch left the band after the second Minutemen show, and George Hurley slid into the drum stool, having left the group he formed after the Reactionaries. The band was invited by Black Flag guitarist Greg Ginn to record a single, which would become Paranoid Time, SST-002. Mixed and recorded in one night, a trebly blast sent shrieking into the new decade of the 1980s. Before long, another 7-inch single, Joy, with three songs, the longest 1 minute and 6 seconds, and an album, The Punchline, SST-004, were released, revealing a band in furious punk motion. By the time of 1983's What Makes a Man Start Fires, the trio was moving into startlingly original territory for a punk band, spewing a knotty, exhilarating jazz-funk-polk-funk hybrid. Boone and Watt each wrote lyrics, Boone's leaning toward fierce barbs that picked up from the approach of the pop group, one of Boone and Watt's favorites, shot through with a working-class forever mindset. And Boone's trebly guitar stood out too, mid-range cut to nothing, bass non-existent, treble boosted to the hilt, like a sped-up, punked-out Steve Cropper, playing blasts that rarely stretched beyond the 90-second mark, but felt whole and complete just the same. Buzz or Howl, under the influence of Heat, arrived at the end of 1983. We turned inward on that one, Watt wrote, but Boone's playing and singing were better than ever, and the production value ramped up to something still very DIY, but entering into a place where the sound was unmistakably Minutemen. Boone's I Felt Like a Gringo was one of his finest songs yet, a political and existential rumination of the highest order. Some drugs.
American trash. You must could ruin a good time.
In 1984, label mates Husker Du came to Total Access Studio in Redondo Beach, California to record their next album with SST producer Spot. In a monumental feat, the Minneapolis trio recorded and mixed 25 songs in around 80 hours, costing a total of $3,200. The result was the landmark double album Zen Arcade. Boone and Watt were not only inspired, they took it as a challenge to take the album's worth of new songs they had written and double it, resulting in their masterpiece, the Spring Sprung Double Nickels on the Dime.
Maybe parting will help.
Five songs sprawl across four album sides, each beginning with the sound of one of the band's vehicles starting up. Boom was often a universe of his own, playing with a mixture of verve, sensitivity, and full-on head rush as he wove in and out of Watt's elastic melodic bass and Hurley's inventive jazz punk rhythms. The sound is far removed from the ferocity of their first single. It's hard to believe it's even the same three musicians. The record bowled over critics, and the group took to the road playing an exhausting touring schedule that featured sets that routinely ran past 30 songs. Boom was the visual center of the group, a heavyset man bouncing like a Super Bowl across the stage while firing out treble-packed jazz punk notes and howling lyrics as if every show was his last. Between Double Nickels and the blazing live shows they played throughout 1984, they had become the moral/spiritual leaders in the American underground, and Boone was their beacon.
A richer understanding of what's already understood. Here and now. Art. Can you call it the big voiced?
By now, the band had perfected an idea that they called jamming a cano, something Watt explains in Under the Big Black Sun. Quote, "One last thing I'd like to explain is our idea of what econo meant. Of course, we got it from the old Ford Econoline vans we did out-of-town gigs in. The first one we did, we borrowed black flags. But what econo meant to us was not just finding what, at the time, might seem the least amount of coin. Econo to us was finding the most bang for buck, looking down the road at what we had to get done and find the way that it made the most sense, the econo way that guaranteed our autonomy and at the same time helped us work as many gigs as we could because that's what we loved doing. It was not about letting the lack of coin dictate to us what could and could not be done. Of course, there's material stuff, and that's the reality of the dealio, but come on, we were from working families. We knew the score on that kind of scene. In this way, we never had to be fake. Not one second. In the movement, like what Popeye said, I am what I am. Hear, hear. Econo was not a slogan, but a way of life for the Minutemen." 1985 found the band in constant creative motion, sounding like they were heading in multiple directions at the same time. The EP Project Mersch had a horn-punctuated Boone composition called King of the Hill, for which the band went so far as to make a music video. Three-way tie for last followed hot on the heels, and like Project Mersch, featured a Boone painting on the cover. In the grooves, the band was moving toward another plateau, Boone offering some of his most direct political and human statements on The Price of Paradise, The Big Stick, and Just Another Soldier, which mingled with covers of Blue Oyster Cult, CCR, Roky Erickson, and LA punk legends The Urinals. Watt lifted a Madonna bass line and welded it to Boone's Courage, perhaps the record's standout moment.
Where's your courage?
Not long after Three-Way Tie for Last hit the record shops, D. Boone was killed in a single vehicle accident on December 22, 1985 at approximately 4 a.m. in the Arizona desert on a desolate stretch of Interstate 10 just west of the small town of Centennial. Because he had been sick with fever, Boone was lying down in the rear of the vehicle, a 1979 Dodge van without a seatbelt, while his longtime girlfriend Linda Kite drove. The van's rear axle broke, and the van ran off the road. Boone was thrown out the back door and died instantly from a broken neck. He was 27 years old. For his unrelenting commitment to DIY and self-expression in art in all true forms, his wonderfully scratchy and trebly guitar, and the sheer force of his personality when he strapped on a guitar and took the stage, D. Boone is a hero of rock.
Boone, the massive logo. Hey, with me,
Like a sped up, punked out Steve Cropper.